This episode of The Yarn is sponsored by Heinemann in their professional book, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs, Practical Guide for Teachers. Colby talked with co-author Sonia Cherry Paul about the book.
In book clubs, our kids were really reading. They were excited and energized to read. And what we tried to do was to give educators lots of practical tips and strategies. You know, once you sort of think through those big pieces of the puzzles, you'll get swept up in the excitement and the fun that the kids are experiencing, and it won't feel as intimidating as we might imagine. Hopefully, this is a book that inspires teachers to light a fire for reading in the classroom.
So, whether you're looking to freshen up your classroom book clubs or begin implementing them for the first time, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs is a great place to start. Visit Heinemann.com to learn more and order a copy.
Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. I will now present to you the list of children's book creators who've received Newbery, Caldecott, Geisel, and National Book Award recognition. Grace Lynn. That's it. That's the list. In this episode, Grace Lynn takes us behind the scenes of her Caldecott Honor-winning book, A Big Moon Cake for Little Star. It's a book that Grace says she couldn't have made without her family. So, let's get started.
My view with you underneath the silvery moon by the light.
So, the book is about a little girl and her mother, and they make a huge moon cake. And the mother asks the girl, please do not touch your moon cake until I tell you to. And the little girl agrees, that's Little Star. But she wakes up in the middle of the night and she cannot resist. And every night she wakes up and takes a little bit and a little bit more of the moon cake, causing the phases of the moon. So the idea came to me in a couple different ways. The first is, you know, a moon cake is something in Chinese culture that we eat at the Autumn Moon Festival. And so anybody who knows my work or knows me or my history, they know that I've always had a kind of a interesting identity where when I was younger, I really was ashamed of being Asian, and as an adult I've really come to embrace it, and that's why I do the books that I do. And so with my own daughter, you know, I really want her to be proud of being Asian, though it's really hard because I'm kind of discovering my own culture and trying to pass it on to her at the same time. So one of the things that I'm trying to do is like make all the Chinese festivals really like wonderful and exciting and like, isn't this so much fun? And so my favorite Chinese festival is the Autumn Moon Festival. So we celebrate that, and that's when we take out the moon cakes. And when my daughter was about 3, she tried her first moon cake, and she loved it. I wasn't sure she was going to like it, but she loved it and she ate the whole thing. However, I live in Western Massachusetts, and where I live, there are no Chinese bakeries. And so I had to order these mooncakes from out of town. And so that was all the mooncakes we had. So she had eaten all the mooncakes, and then she's like, oh, can I have more? And I said, oh, there's no more. She's like, okay, we'll buy another one tomorrow maybe. And I said, oh no, that's all until next moon festival. And then she started wailing and crying as only like a 3.5-year-old can, right? And like so much drama. She was like, oh, I should have saved it. I'll never see another mooncake again. And so me being the parent I am, I said, no, I'll show you a mooncake. You'll see another mooncake. And I whipped out my phone and I started showing her pictures of mooncakes on the internet. And as she was looking at all of them, like, oh, that's like just like the one we ate. We saw all different kinds of mooncakes. And one she saw in the pictures, like, that one looks just like the real moon. And when she said that, it was kind of planted this seed in my head for a story about a girl eating the mooncake that was just like the real moon. So that's why the little star in the book is basically my daughter. So it's a very, very personal book for me. You know, all books have their ups and downs. And, you know, now that it's all over, like it's all done. Like you see everything with like these rose-colored glasses. But I do remember feeling that this is a Big Moon Cake for Little Star was such a personal book for me. You know, it featured my daughter. It's all about these very these emotions about my identity, my daughter's identity. It's a book that really, one of the things that I talked about with with some librarians before was how, you know, this is actually the first picture book that I did since having a child. And what was so interesting about it is that, you know, I published novels and I did some early readers well after my daughter was born, but it was so tough, right? It was so tough to do work. Like, of course, always having a child, it's always hard, right? I'm not saying that I'm unusual that way, but it was so hard to figure out that work-life balance. Like, and I remember I'd be in the bathroom at 3 a.m, you know, with the lights, because I didn't want the light to bother her, and like in typing away, you know, and like always trying to like draw during nap time, you know, like it was always this constant battle of work and life and trying to figure out how to balance things. And so when I have those books, like When the Sea Turns to Silver, which I'm very proud of, but and all these other books, I do have to say, you know, I created those books in spite of having a child, you know, in spite of being overwhelmed with life, you know, in spite of, and I'm very proud of that. But A Big Moon Cake for Little Star, like my whole family was involved in, like Hazel, that's my daughter's name, she posed for the photos, my husband helped, you know, with the props and taking the pictures, and, you know, it was such a family thing, and like they all, every time I finished a picture, they'd all come up and see, you know, and for the first time I felt like I could say I made this book because I was a mother, because I had a family. It wasn't in spite of. It was a book that I couldn't have made if I wasn't a mother, if I didn't have my family. And so I guess the hardest thing was, you know, when you make something so personal and you put it out in the world, and, you know, and it's completely fair. Like, people are completely allowed to have their own personal opinion, but it's always like that hard feeling. Like I've gotten kind of hardened about certain other books. Like, I know, yes, but like this one was so personal. I was like, oh, okay, it's okay. They don't like it. So that's why I think that was the hardest thing, I think. I remember trying to sell, a friend of mine trying to like sell a children's book to one of their adult friends. Like, oh, you should read Harry Potter. And then he'd be like, oh, that's a kid's book. It's like, no, but it's really dark. You'll like it, right? And I remember that kind of struck me, like, oh, because dark meant it would be, you know, it was deeper. Dark is deeper. Dark means more, like more gritty is more important. And I wanted to push back against that. And I was like, wait, I think joy and beauty and things of light can be just as important and just as weighty. And is there, and so I thought about that a lot, which is why I really embraced the black in this book. I was trying to show how something dark could be light. And then in my next book, like when my next book, A Big Bed for Little Snow, is kind of the reverse. I'm trying to show how, like, light, not could be, not dark, but, you know, hopefully it has a little weight. I think Little Brown did a beautiful job reproducing the black. I know that was really, really, really challenging for them. And I remember I met up with the production person, and she was saying how the printer was like, my arm hurts from pouring in all that black ink. This book was a real departure for me. So, like I said, if you know anything about my work, most of my books deal with Asian or Asian American culture. And the reason why I've done that is because I've never felt comfortable with my own Asian culture. And so I do these Asian books in kind of a way to kind of kind of to gain power over my own culture, to feel like it's a part of me, right? So that's why a lot of my books deal with Asian folk tales, Asian fairy tales. It's trying to kind of try me to claim Asian culture as my own. But this book was really different. So my daughter, she loves ducks. One of her favorite books is Make Way for Ducklings. And we live near the Eric Carle Museum, and they were doing a show called, they were doing a show on Robert McCloskey, the illustrator of Make Way for Ducklings. So we decided to go to the show, and we went to the show. We had a great time. I showed her all the pictures, and she's like, quack, quack, quack. She's loving it. And at the very end, she's quacking. And I said, oh, let me take a picture of you with the ducklings. And it was right in the big marquee where they had the big picture of the ducklings and the title of the show. And I'm taking a picture of her, and she's quacking. And just as I finish taking a picture of her, I look up, and I see the title of the show. And that's when I realized the title of the show is Americana on Parade. And when I saw that, I felt this really terrible feeling inside, because I was like, oh my gosh, I just took my daughter through this whole show, you know, Americana on Parade, basically celebrating what is American. And there was absolutely nobody that looked like us in that show. And it made me feel terrible. It made me feel like we were not a part of America. And these are the things that she's going to soak in. And, you know, this is all, we're in like a fraught political time. And at the time that I was conceiving this book and writing it and drawing it, you know, things were freshly fraught. I suppose that's the right way of putting it, you know. And I remember just thinking, gosh, who gets to decide who's American enough, you know? When I went home, I was looking at an art book, and the art style that actually inspired A Big Moon Cake for Little Star is was an artist named Coles Phillips. He's a very famous artist in the 1950s, I think. And he did a book. His style was called the fadeaway style, where basically it was beautiful women whose clothes faded into the background. But the compendium that I had of his that I was looking at was called The All-American Girl. And as I was leafing through his compendium, I was like, it was the same thing as the Eric Carle show. It was like there was nobody that looked like me or my daughter in it. And it really made me want to kind of redefine this idea of the all-American girl. It made me really want to push back on that. And so I remember I went back to the Eric Carle show, and even though my daughter's favorite book is Make Way for Ducklings, my favorite book of his is Blueberries for Sal. And what I loved about that book that I really connected it with is, like, he used Sal, his own daughter, as the main character in that book. And in his own way, he kind of, like, centered his own daughter as the all-American girl. And so I kind of wanted to do the same thing with my book, which is why I centered it on my daughter. And kind of that's what the M papers are, an homage to Blueberries to Sal. But it's the same idea that I'm hoping that books like mine, books that are out there now, we can all redefine, like, the all-American child and who we think of when we say that.
Thank you, Grace Lynn, for the interview. Thank you, Philip Stead, for our theme music. Additional music for this episode from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.